Channel open. Welcome back to Weekly Trek, a proud member of the Tricorder Transmissions podcast network. I am your host, Alex Perry.
What's today's date? The date.
Today's show was recorded on March 28th, 2019, and is current through the Star Trek Discovery Season 2 episode, Perpetual Infinity. So beware of spoilers. All right, let's get into the show.
Good day, Voyager, and welcome to A Briefing with Neelix. It's a catchy title, isn't it?
Weekly Trek is a 30-minute news show covering the biggest stories from the Star Trek franchise. We are in a new golden age of Star Trek. There are four television shows in active production. We learned this week that there continues to be a fifth right around the corner, and we have enough merchandise to fill the Bajoran wormhole. So stick with me, and I will help you sort the real facts from a lot of the Dominion propaganda that you'll find online. But I can't do this alone, and my guest this week is Tyler Habiger. Tyler, welcome to Weekly Trek.
Alex, thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
Oh, it's my absolute pleasure. I am a huge fan of your STLV cosplays.
Oh, well, thank you very much. It is good to live out my seven-year-old fantasies of playing Captain Kirk. So I look forward to having all the variations of James Tiberius Kirk's wardrobe through his lifetime.
That sounds like a really noble goal to have. All right, Tyler, I ask my guests this every week, but I want to know something that you're enjoying about Star Trek at the moment. Tell me what's got you moving at Warp 10.
What has got me moving to pass the transwarp barrier is, I have to say, it is something from your introduction, actually. It is the amount of time, talent, and treasures and resources that are going into revitalizing the Star Trek franchise. When you look at it, it seems to me there is some sort of new breaking news about the franchise every week. I was born in the 1990s. And I sort of missed, during my formative years, the first golden age of Star Trek when you had TNG and DS9 and Voyager and so forth airing at the same time. So I am so thrilled to be living in this second golden age of sorts where there is Star Trek coming out of the ears of CBS and all their affiliates. So I'm so happy to be living in this age and to have experiences like this where I get to come on and talk about the news of the week.
Yeah, I can't imagine a 30-minute news show working every week 5 years ago, 7 years ago.
No.
Maybe a monthly news show, if that. And when I took over the show, I thought, how can there possibly be enough news to fill a weekly show every single week? And yet, here I am on a full 3 months into doing this, and I've not had what I would consider to be a slow news week yet. There's always been plenty to talk about, and it is so exciting. So much Star Trek on the way, so many new products coming down the pipeline. There is always, for a Star Trek fan, there is something new to enjoy every week. And yeah, it is a phenomenal, phenomenal feeling.
I thought we would be blessed to have one show going on, let alone 4 to 5 now. So I'm very happy about that.
I know. Even a year ago, could you have imagined going back in time and telling yourself 1 year ago today, at the end of we would have just wrapped up the first season of Star Trek Discovery, that this time next year, we would know that there were probably 4 more television shows coming right down the pike at us at warp speed.
I wouldn't have believed you. I was simply would not have done it.
Yeah, I'm with you. So my pick this week is based on the most recent episode we just watched, Perpetual Infinity.
Yes.
My pick is the acting of our leading lady of Star Trek Discovery, Sonequa Martin-Green. I think she is just fabulous in this role. This was a solid episode this week that really advanced us, I think, into the end game of Star Trek Discovery Season 2. Obviously, many of the mysteries of the season now lie revealed. Who is the enemy? Who is the Red Angel? We have our answers to that now. But every week, Sonequa Martin-Green is turning in an Emmy-winning performance. I mean, just this week, those scenes in sickbay after she wakes up and realizes that it actually was her mother who was the Red Angel. The emotions that go through her face, you feel every inch of that relationship over the course of the episode towards the end. And it is just so, so phenomenal to watch. And we truly are blessed to have Sonequa as the leading lady of Star Trek at the moment. Are you an SMG fan, Tyler?
Very much so. I had the fortune of meeting Sonequa when she came to my hometown, Kansas City, for Planet Comic Con a couple of years ago, and she is everything that you think she is and more. She is so warm, she is so kind, she is so giving to her fans, and she gives the exact amount of energy to her fans as she does to the show. And I agree. I think she gets better every week. It seems that in the Star Trek world, parental issues seems to be a common denominator with our main characters. So it seems to be going alive and well in Star Trek Discovery. So I look forward to it every week. It is the best night of the week, Disco Thursday.
100%. All right. Well, with that, let's turn to the week's top stories.
There's a war going on, and I'm a reporter.
So most of our news this week comes out of PaleyFest, which was an event that took place last weekend in Los Angeles, in which the cast and crew of Star Trek Discovery gathered together to talk about the show. And most of the news we have this week comes right off of the red carpet, in which Alex Kurtzman and a number of the stars of Star Trek Discovery were interviewed by various outlets. And our first story this week is about the end of Discovery Season 2. The cast seem to have been very clear. There is a game changer coming at the end of this season. We are being told to buckle in and strap up for something that will fundamentally change Star Trek Discovery. So let me just give you a couple of quotes from the interview. Alex Kurtzman: "We are entirely aware of everyone's questions and criticisms. I've read everything, and I see where everyone's like, well, the spore drive never existed, and what, Discovery was never around, and all of those things, we're totally aware. You will get an answer." Doug Jones: "As I read the final script of season 2, my jaw dropped and I'm dumbfounded with where we're headed. So I think the fans can expect to boldly go where no Star Trek series has ever gone before." And lastly, Wilson Cruz: "Expect the unexpected is what my mother always says, and it couldn't be more true, especially on this season, because it'll change everything." Obviously, we don't know how the season's going to end, but it sounds like we have some kind of earth-shattering, groundbreaking change in the show coming down the roller coaster towards us. Tyler, how do you feel about this news that the end of season 2 is going to be this big?
Oh my goodness. I tell you, it gives me newfound respect for our showrunner, Alex Kurtzman, because when he says that he reads everything, I really think he means it. He reads everything that the fans say, that the cast says, the writers think, everything like that. So I truly believe we're going to get some conclusions to some of the overarching storylines from season 2, but also from season 1. I think that there's some sort of conclusion that's going to happen with the time travel story, with popping through universes and so forth. So I really think it's going to be something circling around those lines. I could be completely wrong. I hope I am wrong, because something that I love, love, love about Star Trek Discovery is that you really don't know what's going to happen next. And this crew and this company really seems to be good about keeping things under wraps, which I'm so grateful for, that there's really not a whole lot to spoil every week, that we get everything so fresh.
Totally. My theory this week is going to be how the season ends. So I'm going to hold my speculation on what's going to happen about the end of the season. But Tyler, if you had to guess, what do you think is going to happen?
Oh, if I had to guess, I would imagine that we find the crew time traveling in some way or another. I find them either going to the end of the universe or to the beginning of the universe. That's what I think. I could be completely wrong. And again, I hope I am wrong. But that's what I would predict.
Interesting. Well, we will table this discussion for the end of the episode, because I'll throw my theory at you and I'll throw my evidence at you, and we'll see how it lands for you.
Oh, my goodness.
So our next story is an update from Alex Kurtzman on the other shows that are coming down the pike. We have the Section 31 show, which, according to Alex Kurtzman, the showrunners Bo-Young Kim and Erica Lippold are continuing to break the story. The Section 31 show does not have, at this time, a formal series order from CBS All Access, but Alex did seem to indicate that it was kind of a formality at this point that it would get one, but they just weren't far enough along in the process for it to have been formally greenlit. I think the other takeaway I had from this interview was that I think we do need to be patient with these other shows. So we know coming at the end of this year will be season 1 of the as yet untitled Picard show. We know that in 2020 we will also have season 3 for Star Trek Discovery. But it seems like some of these other shows, like the Section 31 show, like the Lower Decks animated series, we may not see those until potentially more like the 2021-2022 timeframe, which would put them potentially as many as 2 years away from today. The other thing that was interesting interesting about this interview. Seems like the Nickelodeon show, the second animated TV show that we've talked about in recent weeks, is very, very close to being a done deal. Alex talks about it as though it's happening, but then is quick to mention that it is not kind of formally announced yet, but that definitely seems to be like it is moving ahead. He said he's very excited with the concept that the showrunners have come up for, and also that he does not have any comment at this time on what's going on with the Starfleet Academy show that was rumored in the trade publications when Kurtzman's deal taking over a wider role in the franchise was first revealed. But Tyler, was there anything about this interview that struck you, and how do you feel about potentially a two-year wait for some of these additional shows?
As a fan, I am completely okay with waiting. I hope all of Discovery fans and Star Trek fans in general, I hope they realize this commitment from CBS All Access to have all of these shows going, and CBS in general, to have these shows going, not only on CBS All Access, but on Nickelodeon and other outlets. This is a huge commitment to them, and this is a testament to how much they believe in the power of Star Trek and how much people are going to take to these shows. So I do believe that they are doing the right thing in that we are waiting a little bit, because we want to get used to the show before we get something new to sink our teeth into. So I really think they're being cautious about rolling things out as well as putting things on different networks. The Nickelodeon show especially, I am really excited about, because Star Trek is primarily an older fan base from what I understand and what the demographics are. So I'm so excited to get Star Trek onto the audience for younger children. And I believe that's going to be a wonderful move for them and sort of starting them early, as it were. So I'm very excited about that.
You know, in one breath, you might think, you know, it's disappointing that we have three more shows that have been announced. It might still be another 2 years before we see them. But there is actually a lot of content coming between now and then. We have two short treks that we know will be on after the conclusion of season two of Star Trek Discovery. We have the Picard show that's premiering at the end of this year, which is going to be 10 episodes. And we have a third season of Star Trek Discovery that's warming up for a premiere likely not too long after the conclusion of the first season of the Picard show. So at 10 episodes for Picard season one, at 13 episodes for Star Trek Discovery season three, we're already locked in for another 23 weeks of new Star Trek between now and potentially the end of 2020, which, you know, is pretty good, actually. I mean, that's half a year, a full six months in which we'll have new Star Trek every week. And I think I'm okay with that, especially if we're sort of building in additional short treks around that. It'd be really nice if they did another round of four short treks before the season three premiere. Obviously, we know we've got two more coming that are in production already. So there is plenty of Star Trek to come, and then we will eventually get to that kind of 2021 period. And I think by then, we will really be firing on all cylinders in terms of having either something new on every week or a couple of things on for some weeks out of the year, which, you know, is just so exciting.
Absolutely. And I know that I have some sort of underground, as I troll the internet interwebs for different rumors and so forth, that they are starting to look at sort of some preliminary casting for the Nickelodeon series, which is so exciting, because when you looked at Star Trek back in the 90s, that was the show that every actor had to be on in order to make it in the business. Like in the early 2000s, it was CSI, but back in the 90s, it was Star Trek. So I feel like we're sort of coming back around full circle again for getting this golden age of this is the franchise that everybody has to be a part of in order to sort of make their careers in a way. So this is so exciting. And this is just, it generates buzz for multiple different people in multiple different areas. So again, very exciting.
So our next story, we're staying with Alex Kurtzman. He had a lot to say at PaleyFest. And while on stage, he was asked about the current status of the Picard show, which we know is now just about 2 weeks away from starting active production and shooting in Santa Clarita, California. And Alex Kurtzman said that the Picard show was gearing up. A couple of quotes that I picked out that I thought were interesting. First, he said, "I had an amazing experience yesterday. I sat at Patrick's kitchen table and heard him read the first episode and I almost cried. It was quite something. He is at an amazing place in his life. He is so excited." And then a second quote I pulled out, "We all know what Picard means to you and why he, like so many legendary characters in Star Trek, have endured what they have represented in. He in some ways has to go through a gauntlet in order to find that. Things have changed for him and changed him in some ways, and yet he is so deeply and fundamentally Picard." So obviously, as we've talked about at length. We really don't know a huge amount about what the story behind the show is, but I think there are a couple of things we can tease out from Alex Kurtzman's comments at PaleyFest this past weekend, and just from sort of the casting announcements that we've had to date. It certainly seems like Picard has surrounded himself with a new group of people. It also sounds like he is in a very different stage in his life than he was when we last left him as captain of the Enterprise. It could be the case that, you know, something has happened in the life of Jean-Luc Picard that has kind of made him low, and the show will be about sort of building him back up again, but with the character kind of remaining sort of fundamentally that same character that we know and we love. I think one of the things that appealed to Sir Patrick Stewart about doing the show was having done Logan with Hugh Jackman. That was sort of a, let's take this character far into the future and let's maybe play out the end of their story. And that could very well be the case for Jean-Luc Picard here as well. But Tyler, how are you feeling about the Picard show? And was there anything about Alex Kurtzman's comments at PaleyFest that pricked your ears up?
Talk about being patient. We've waited 20 years for the return of Jean-Luc Picard. So this, if that has taught Star Trek fans anything, that is patience. I do think this is wonderful news as far as how the show is progressing and how excited Sir Pat Stu is about coming back to portray Jean-Luc Picard. But also a previous comment that Alex Kurtzman had made concerning sort of the timeline of the Picard series is it also plays into also the destruction of Romulus. And I'm loving how it's sort of almost a callback to Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, when the Klingon Empire entered sort of a new era in their time and they sued for peace with the Federation. And it's not the Federation that James T. Kirk grew up serving and giving his life to. So with sort of this vacuum of power without Romulus, Jean-Luc Picard could be changed in almost in a lot of the same ways. Like, this is not the Federation that he grew up serving. Like, there are new politics involved. There are new socioeconomics with the Federation and everything. So with all these new people showing up around him, you know, he still has his core values, but they also, some of these new people might have something to teach him. So with what Alex is saying, it sounds like you are exactly right. They're going sort of that way of the Logan way of telling stories now. And I'll also venture more like the Blade Runner, for example, where they bring back Harrison Ford to tell more of that story. So I do believe that they're very much on the right track with this. It seems like there's going to be a lot of changes with the Federation that we left in Star Trek Nemesis in 2002. So I do believe that this is going to be a really great story, and I'm thrilled that they start filming on April 15th. That's going to be so wonderful.
I really like that comparison between what this Picard show could be and Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. As much as that's a movie that I might have a couple of problems with, which if you want to hear more about, you can find them on Trek Ranks, Five Things You Can't Get Over, episode 47. But one of the things that The Undiscovered Country did really well was to be a very clear political allegory for the end of the Cold War, which was this really kind of interesting time where nobody really knew what was going to happen afterwards. And Star Trek The Undiscovered Country felt like one way of trying to process that experience through the Star Trek lens to think about what the next step in everybody's life will look like after the end of the Soviet Union. I think, you know, there's a lot going on in the world today that Star Trek could really clearly comment on. And Discovery has chosen to focus on some of the themes of the political world that we live in today, but I think there's plenty more that the Picard show could be exploring as well. So yeah, Tyler, I think that was a very fabulous analogy.
And I do appreciate that Kurtzman is telling fans like he is so deeply and fundamentally Picard, because there are so many of my close friends that were TNG babies and they were raised on Picard. So for them to come back to Picard in their adult years, I think that's something very special to behold.
Totally. I'm one of those kids as well. I mean, I started watching Star Trek The Next Generation when I was 6 years old, and Picard has always been my captain. He was always the one who I felt closest to. And so for that character to be returning to Star Trek is really, really special.
I think my cosplay gives mine away. I think I'll always be a Kirk baby. So I was introduced to Space Seed at age 9 on Laserdisc, so I'll always be a Kirk baby.
Hey, there is absolutely nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with the OG, right?
That's exactly right.
So our last story for this week concerns the design of the Discovery Enterprise. So on TrekMovie.com, they did an article in which they did a deep dive into the Eagle Moss USS Enterprise Discovery version magazine. So if you buy one of the Eagle Moss starships, the magazines don't tend to get talked about too much, but with every starship release, you get a magazine, talks about the history of the ship, about the sort of design process. And I think this is one ship where everybody's really, really interested in the design process behind it. The Discovery Enterprise is loved by many, has been criticized by a few. I think I fall in the loved by many category. But it was a design that was created by John Eaves and Scott Schneider, who were on the Star Trek Discovery art department at the end of season one. And the design that they came up with was one that was actually a lot closer to the original USS Enterprise from the original series, that they had sort of very thoughtfully kind of come up with ways in which they would make changes to the ship that could then easily be undone so that it would end up looking like the original series version of the ship in TOS. And actually, we do see on screen that version of the Enterprise in the season premiere of season two of Star Trek Discovery Brother. On the Discovery Bridge scenes, there is a schematic of the USS Enterprise on some of the screens. And that actually is the John Eaves, Scott Schneider design before it was sent off to the VFX department. So nobody's quite clear what happened to the ship, but at some point in the process of the VFX team taking the artwork that Eaves and Schneider put together and turning it into a digital model, further changes were made to the Enterprise. That's where the sweatback, more motion picture style nacelles were introduced for the ship, and some of the slight proportional changes to, particularly to the star drive section, and the elongation of the shuttle bay was something that came much, much later in the process. It doesn't bother me too much. The original series Enterprise and the motion picture Enterprise are two ships that we accept as being exactly the same, even though there is not one piece of similarity between either of those two ships. They are 100% different ships, but we accept them as being the same because the story tells us they're the same. I think it's exactly the same between the Discovery Enterprise and the original series Enterprise. But Tyler, you're a Captain Kirk OG or die man. How do you feel about the Discovery version of the USS Enterprise?
I tell you, when I first came on the screen, I stood up and applauded in my dark apartment. That's how happy I was to see the Enterprise, even in a new redesigned form, to match with the Star Trek Discovery world. I thought it was a wonderful redesign, and it really fits with the universe and the aesthetic quite well. If for those that are not familiar with John Eaves, I would encourage you to pick up some of his sketchbooks. He is very much a keeper of the legacy, going back all the way to Matt Jeffries and Gene Roddenberry, very back to the beginning. What I love about this article is that it really goes into detail about how John Eaves sort of respects what came before, but also making his mark on it. Like, for example, you see some of the design aesthetics from the 1701B from Generations, the 1701E from First Contact and Nemesis. You see some of their design aesthetics and so forth. But there was actually a quote. I was researching this article when I was getting ready to come on the show, and there was actually a quote from Matt Jeffries back in the late 60s where he goes about talking about the design of the Enterprise and why it's so plain on the outside of the ship. And he gives this quote back in the 60s, and it's so relevant and it's so poignant today in the 2010s going on 2020s, that outer space is probably the worst environment for a humanoid, even worse than being under the ocean. Without outside help, there's no way you can live. And since anything that man makes can break down, why put equipment outside the hull where you'd have to go outside the ship to fix it? That, and my desire to play color off it, was the reason I kept the Enterprise exterior as plain as possible. That was Matt Jeffries back in the 60s talking about the exterior of the ship. But of course, now with the Enterprise, you see all these design aesthetics on the outside. You see torpedo tubes and tractor beams and nacelles and Bussard collectors and so forth. So you definitely see some advances on the ship while also respecting what had come before. So it's a really cool design. And I personally cannot wait to get my Star Trek ship with this beautiful 10-inch design on it. I'm excited to add that to my collection of Enterprises.
It is fabulous. I have the XL version that they released over Christmas, and it's a really, really nice ship to have in your hands and to hold. And the Ford subscribers of the Star Trek Discovery Starship Collection, issue 12 will be a version of the USS Enterprise Discovery Edition that is in the same scale as the rest of the Discovery Starships Collection. So slightly smaller than the XL version that was released as a separate release earlier this year. So we've talked about the facts, and now let's speculate on what's going to happen in the future of Star Trek.
You make some very good points, Captain. But it's still all speculation and theory.
So each week, I and my guests are going to give a theory that we're nurturing about the future of the franchise or a wish for what we'd like to see. So Tyler, let me hear your theory or wish for this week.
My wish for the future of this franchise is that I wish, and I believe this will come true, I wish that we continue to see more powerful females in the commander's chair or the captain's chair as these shows progress. Particularly with Star Trek Discovery, we see so many powerful women. My favorite being Admiral Katrina Cornwell. She is my favorite of all of these wonderful characters that we've been introduced to. She is an age-appropriate woman in the Admiralty, which I love. I think that's a wonderful inclusion that we really haven't seen a whole lot of in the 50-year history of Star Trek. So more Cornwell, more of these powerful women, that is my wish going forward. My theory, I think that whatever happens with the ending of Discovery this season, I have a feeling, my theory is that it's going to tie into some story, some sort of obscure story that we haven't thought much about from either the original series, the Next Generation, possibly tying into the Picard series. I really think we're going to see some more of that sort of Talos IV storytelling that we saw executed so brilliantly in season 2 of Star Trek Discovery. So that is my wish and that is my theory for going forward.
I love that wish. Star Trek Discovery has really gone further than any Star Trek show before in terms of showing us that women get SHIT done. Project Daedalus, the all-lady away team, Sonequa Martin-Green, Mary Wiseman, Admiral Cornwell. The show is Emperor Georgiou. The show is stocked full of Chancellor Lorel, fabulous female characters, Lieutenant Commander Arium, Detmer, Owusu-kun, Dr. Pollard. There are, number one, so many great characters, and I can't wait for more, and I can't wait for the other new shows in the franchise to adopt the same philosophy. I'm totally on board with that wish. As far as your theory, I think I agree. So here's my theory for the end of Star Trek Discovery Season 2, and it is the most out there theory I've thrown out so far, but I'm going to throw it out there and we'll see how it lands. So I have a theory. I was listening to Matt Myra's podcast, Star Trek The Next Conversation. If you're a Patreon subscriber, they're currently talking about Star Trek Discovery. They're doing the episodes one by one. And I was listening to one of his episodes in which he said that he had heard that at some point the writer's room was considering that at the end of season one of Star Trek Discovery, the Discovery would jump into the future and end up after the events of Star Trek Voyager. My theory is that's going to happen. My theory also is that we are going to see a future USS Enterprise. So why do I make such an outlandish claim? There has been an Instagram picture going around for the last few weeks that is a picture of Alex Kurtzman and a set photographer, I think his name is Denny Den, in which the caption is, they're standing in front of a green screen, and the caption is, on the other side of this picture is the bridge of the USS Enterprise, but I can't show it to you. And everybody has assumed that that bridge is the bridge of the original Enterprise, that having seen it in the season premiere Brother, and having stepped onto it in the former Spock's quarters, we will see the TOS bridge in Discovery form. But at the Toronto Creatives panel last month, Tamara Deverell, the lead production designer for Star Trek Discovery, said in an interview, I think it was with Trek Movie, that she had not designed a TOS bridge of the USS Enterprise. I think she said something along the lines of, if I had designed the USS Enterprise bridge, I probably would have made it much closer to canon than the Spock's quarters that we saw, which they just couldn't do something closer to canon because of time and money. And my guest that week was Heather Kirby, and we had this conversation about how we both thought we were going to see the Enterprise bridge, but this kind of said that we weren't, and therefore, did this mean that, you know, was Tamara Deverell lying to throw us off the scent? I guess that's certainly possible. But if there's going to be a jump for this ship into the future, which, coming back to the first story we were talking about this week, Alex Kurtzman promising a canon-fixing game changer, Doug Jones saying the Star Trek, this show is going where no Star Trek show has gone before, where else other than beyond the events of Star Trek Voyager would it make sense? And if it's the case that the ship is jumping into the 24th century, who better to greet it than the next iteration of the Starship Enterprise? So we would get ourselves an Enterprise bridge. So Denny Den and Alex Kurtzman are standing on the bridge of the USS Enterprise, pointing their camera away from it, but it would not be the bridge of the original series. It's a totally audacious theory, but it's one that potentially fits a lot of the different breadcrumbs that have been left behind. In terms of canon, I don't think it's a problem that Spock never mentioned Michael Burnham. He never mentioned Cyborg until Star Trek V, The Final Frontier. But it certainly seems to be something that a lot of fans have gotten fixated on. And I think it's something that the producers have taken on board. Also around what happens to the Spore Drive. Well, if the Discovery ends up being a lost ship at the end of the Seven Signals Red Angel events for the Federation, the premier science ship for the Federation that had an experimental drive was lost with all hands and nobody heard from them again, that would provide a pretty compelling reason to put the Spore Drive on ice. So that's my theory. Am I right? Probably not. That's audacious and ridiculous and extremely bold and probably just too far out there for this show. And it would also leave behind potentially a number of 23rd century characters that we wouldn't see again, like Sarek, like Amanda, potentially like Laurel. But it fits the available evidence. It would be a game changer. It would potentially, quote unquote, fix canon. Tyler, what do you think?
I tell you, I buy it. I really do. I also think it would create a beautiful way for, I think, the best short treks to come into it, Calypso. Whereas you see the Discovery thousands of years into the future, the crew is long gone. It's just sort of out there in this nebula, just sort of hanging around. Where did the crew go? What's happened? I don't know. So I do think that there's going to be a way to come back to that other short treks and sort of tie that into what's going on. Would I love to see that happen? Absolutely. Do I think it will happen? Probably not, because I think they want that future to go exclusively with the Picard series. That would be my guess, to sort of keep the shows apart. But if they were to time travel to jump to the future and put the Spore Drive on ice, I believe it, because they do have to get rid of the Spore Drive at some point. They have to get rid of a lot of that technology at some point in order to, like they say, come full circle with the canon of the Star Trek universe. So do I think it could happen? Absolutely, I do. I'm all on board with that. I'm ready to see what happens.
Well, in 3 weeks, I will either be hailed as a savant or cursed as a madman, and I guess we will find out.
And you win the job at StarTrek.com.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's all the time we've got for this episode of Weekly Trek. Thank you so much to my guest, Tyler Habiger, for joining me today. Tyler, how can people contact you if they want to continue the conversation?
Yes, please. I would love to continue anything that you heard tonight or any Star Trek in general. I'd love to answer cosplay questions or anything like that. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at RT Habiger. That's H-A-B as in boy, I-G-E-R. If you spelled hamburger, you've gone too far.
That's amazing. And Tyler, you really are a fabulous cosplayer. So if anybody's listening is interested in cosplay, you have to go give Tyler a follow. And if you're at Star Trek Las Vegas, you have to find the fabulous Kirk costumes and say hello.
Absolutely.
Well, Weekly Trek is going on hiatus for the next 2 weeks. My wife and I are off to New Zealand. She is as big of a Lord of the Rings fan as I am a Star Trek fan. So we're off to tour the filming locations for the Lord of the Rings movies. And as a result, because I will be 17 hours in the future, we will not have an opportunity to record an episode of Weekly Trek for the next 2 weeks. But we will be back with a bumper show talking about all of the news that we will have missed over the next 2 weeks. I'm looking forward to lining up a slate of great guests when we're back in mid-April. And to tide you over, I am running a giveaway. I would love to get some more listeners for Weekly Trek. And the way to do that, as everybody tells me, is by accruing reviews. So I have a copy of The Autobiography of Jean-Luc Picard by David Goodman, and I am giving it away to one lucky listener. All you have to do is, on your podcast player of choice, leave Weekly Trek a 5-star review, take a screenshot of that review, and DM it to me on Twitter at Weekly Trek. Send me a picture and you will be entered to win a copy of The Autobiography of Jean-Luc Picard, which, if you haven't read it, and hopefully you haven't if you're entering to win a copy, it is a really, really fabulous book and will whet your appetite for the return of Jean-Luc Picard later this year. And I'll also say,
seconded.
And I'll also say, I will ship anywhere in the world. So if you're in the UK and you do it on UK iTunes, that's fabulous. As I say, just take a screenshot, and send it to me, and you will be entered automatically into the draw. And I will announce the winner on my next show when I get back, which will be for the third week in April. You can find this show on Twitter at Weekly Trek and me at Alexander T. Perry. And if you enjoy the show, please consider leaving us a 5-star review, especially if you want that autobiography of Jean-Luc Picard on your podcast player of choice. And please check out some of the other great shows on the Tricorder Transmissions, especially because Weekly Trek will be taking a 2-week break. What a perfect opportunity to go and check out Trek Ranks, Polytrex, Reading Trek, Shore Leave, Disco Trek. There is plenty for you to listen to while we're off the air for a couple of weeks. And if you like our show, please also consider becoming a Patreon of Tricorder, which you can find at patreon.com/thetricordertransmissions. And lastly, if you're looking for Star Trek news on the internet, I hope you will turn to trekcore.com. Well, thank you, Tyler. Thank you to all of my listeners. And until next week, live long and prosper.